welcome to Inner Space, your 2023 annual reading. I'm Eric Francis here with the audio talk, the more informal presentation, a different way to take in ideas in astrology. Before I go into the astrology part of our astrology reading, I want to acknowledge just what an unbelievably challenging and stressful time this is to be alive in Western culture. Now, as far as I know, from my knowledge of history and cultural history, it's never really been that easy. But we are in the middle of a kind of an onslaught, what I believe is a revolution, and there is just unbearable amounts of damage being done to people, and even if it's not you, it is difficult to live with. We know people who are being hurt and who have been. And we have seen the world just thrown out of balance and in many ways needlessly demolished. And it is difficult to be optimistic in such a time. It is difficult to think that anything could be better. And part of why that is because it seems risky to do so in a way, like to have any aspiration or, you know, positive expectation in a way seems dangerous. And yet, it's in times like the ones that we're in where courage counts the most and rising to the occasion counts, and we're remembering that we need to cooperate and support one another in living, and that this has nothing to do with jumping on any belief train, but rather living the Dharma, the spiritual energy field of acting as if to hold the world together. And it's up to each of us to do that and to live our lives as best we can, as harmlessly as we can. And in my philosophy of living, to do what we can to assist people, however we can do that without harming ourselves. Your astrology for 2023 and well beyond is really exciting. The transits that are potentially the most challenging and perhaps dangerous land in your chart in a way where you have the easiest, just about, I think, the easiest potential to harness their power and their potential. The watershed moment, well, all of 2023, particularly the spring, is a watershed moment, meaning that it is one of those massive transitional stages in history where there is no going back, and I think we're going to notice that. It's going to be pretty obvious. I think we lived through that in 2020, but we weren't really aware what it was at the time. It was packaged as something different. And looking back, of course, we know that there's no turning back. And among the major transitions of 2023 are sign changes of Saturn and Pluto, who are taking up residence in adjoining houses in your chart. And then Mars changes signs right at the same time, so that is in the mix. And Mars changing signs wouldn't normally be a big deal because it does it so often, but after a retrograde, the first time it enters a new sign, and then that sign being a cardinal sign and that sign being an angular house, it's your 10th place, so it's angular, it's one of the cardinal points in your chart, it all adds up to quite a lot of change all at once. And I am concerned about Pluto and Aquarius for a diversity of reasons. The main one being that, for one thing, we've never lived through this. No one remembers this. The last time it happened was in the American Revolutionary era, changed signs during the Revolutionary War into Aquarius, and wasn't discovered yet. It's finally discovered in 1930, not taken seriously really by professional astrologers till the 1960s. Dane Rudyard leading the way. Isabel Hickey also leading the way in the 1970s, following up on Dane Rudyard. And so this is a completely new experience for humanity. And part of my concern is the involvement of the technological realm with the sign Aquarius, where Pluto is going to go. And what we've experienced in these recent years, particularly the past 3 years, but then you can look back at the stages of history, and you can track how the digital realm is the thing that was happening. That's like the lead story, and yet no one notices it because they're busy ordering pizzas on their phone or McDonald's. Like I went to McDonald's for coffee the other day just to try it. And it's like, really, you order McDonald's on your app and then you park your car out in the parking lot and they bring it out to your car. It's like, okay. And that's the innocent side of the digital environment. It's infiltrated every last human transaction, and in the process completely transformed humanity into something different. And all of these technologies tend to dehumanize people, numb us out, create a level of intensity that is overwhelming, and so people withdraw. When the last thing that is helpful is withdrawing. You really want to stay awake. And each successive wave of what happens, and it's being done in waves, it is being done. There are plans. The plans are written out. The people who publish the plans are proud of them. They talk about them all the time in major media and social media and YouTube. They can be named. The plans can be read. And wave after wave essentially convinces more and more people that they're not human. Now, you may know that I am a devoted student of the philosophy of Marshall McLuhan. And the more I read, the more I hear him saying that the only way to counter this dehumanizing, tribalizing, de-individuating, numbing out quality of the world we're living in wave after wave of this technology being pushed on us is to remain creative. He believes and says many times over that artists are the only antidote to this. And what he means by artists is not people who might paint or make sculptures or make music. Plenty of them are sleeping. What he means is people who are awake, people who do not numb out when they take their tools into their hands, whatever that tool might be, and who are conscious of this nod-off point, this line of what I think of as kind of a line of liminality, of awareness of oneself and one's environment. And so we have this unbelievably powerful transit, 20 years coming, of Pluto in Aquarius. And where this lands in your chart is in the house where, of all the 12, where someone is the most likely to take it as a call to personal awakening and to being willing to take the risk to stand up to this overwhelming pressure we are under to reduce ourselves to something far less than human. The word is transhuman. It gets an extra four letters, but what it really means is non-human or human entity merged with digital. And this has been happening. It is the story of 2020. It is the story of much of our lives. And you get to break the consensus. That is a way of considering Pluto in Aquarius in the fifth. Aquarius is a very important sign in your chart because it's a fellow air sign. It's an expression of Libra. Libra is about one-on-one relationships. And Aquarius is about group relationships. So the air signs all talk about relationships. Gemini is the twins. Depending on your source, the twins, the brothers, the lovers, it's all the same basic concept. And Libra picks up on that theme, but brings it into a sexual context. It brings it into a creative context because the ruler is Venus. And it elaborates on the story of Gemini by presenting us with this necessity to keep our relationships in balance. And by the way, if anything has been potentially the most irritating to you the past 3 years, it is that we are really full strength into this world out of balance problem. And it is not merely that it is going out of balance or happening to be out of balance. There is an action involved. We are being driven out of balance and into a state of chaos and weakness. Aquarius puts us in a group context, and so there's a lot of consensus building in Aquarius and a lot of cementing the social pattern in a way that is supposed to be intractable and where anyone who is sane is going to be afraid to break the consensus. And many people, we've seen this for the past 3 years, who would normally position themselves as outliers and consensus breakers and people willing to contradict the status quo, just rolled over and went with it. And all of society is paying the price. Many of the people that we looked up to as the boldest and the most innovative, most trustworthy, were conned, surrendered their power and their influence, and had that power and influence co-opted and used against the people who love them. And we are living in and through this aftermath. And we now need a new generation of people who are willing to wake up and break the consensus, to have the guts, to have the courage, to have the human dignity, to realize that to be human, we must within ourselves, and then as an example, stand up to all that we are being made to do and become that is not human. So Pluto is going to power this up for you. It is an extraordinarily bold transit through the fifth house. And it represents the true essence of art in any form that it may take, which is being anti-environment, going against the prevailing currents and tides and pressures and this overwhelming resistance to change, and is inviting you to fully step into your courage and challenge what you see and feel happening. And I don't mean challenge in the sense of making a political statement, protesting in some way. Excuse me. I'm having a little reaction to the extremely dry 5-degree no humidity air around here. But rather, reaching into yourself and bringing forth what you know to be true for you, and putting that where people can see it, not your notebook, not hiding it, not painting it, putting it in the closet, not writing it and stashing it away, but sharing your passionate soul fire with the world and fully embodying all of those things that make you who you are, your curiosity, your sense of beauty, your sense of cooperation, and the necessity of cooperation. This is all about Pluto and Aquarius for you. Now, what has been going on the previous 15 years since 2008? And we all remember 2008, the rapid cascade of crazy shit that came down the year that Pluto changed signs from Sagittarius to Capricorn. Think back on that year. That was Obama versus McCain. It was the banking collapse. It was the financial 9/11. It was the robber barons robbing the bank one last time on their way out of office and kind of opening the door for the next generation thereof. At that stage, Pluto started going through the foundation of your chart, which is the fourth place, Capricorn. And this has trained you, taught you, or necessitated that you be able to really connect with your emotional and material independence, and that you be the source of your own safety and your own grounding, rather than doing what is often easy for you, which is to build on a previously existing foundation. And so this has been a fabulous teacher. And I get that the previous foundation that you rested on was basically completely demolished. And it may have been that you were kind of rebuilding the sandcastle between the waves, or, rebuilding the house between earthquakes, only to have another earthquake knock it down, and you just took the stuff, the rubble, and rebuilt it again and again and again. And in that process, you sank a foundation, and more than being a material foundation, such as might be associated with Capricorn, your fourth place, is a spiritual foundation, a soul foundation, and a clearing of obstructions from the past. Tendencies, material about your family, belief structures, the ideas that we are so lucky to live in such a stable society, and all this stuff, and replace that with a very deep tap root that I would call, like, basically having the power of your soul being drawn up from the earth itself. And so you're not entering this Pluto and Capricorn phase unprepared. Pluto and Aquarius phase unprepared. Far to the contrary, you're entering it having learned many times over that you can trust and count on yourself, and that even if there is not the kind of family that you wish you could trust and count on, you are seeing that you are drawing together a kind of a soul group of people who, though they may not be local, very little is these days, but some is, that this soul group has become your new family. What Pali folk call family of choice. But it's not merely that you're like, oh, I want you, and I want you. It's the people are finding one another. And if were it not for the removal of these artificial structures and broken promises from the past, it would be very difficult for you to find and even see these people. And so you can see them amidst the debris of what has been leveled. And now it is time to rise above this new foundation and to take up the work of the most creative house, and in a sense to build your own civilization, or to identify people who are doing so and merge with them in the process of doing so, and to reform community based on a much more valid criterion than whether people are born into the same family or what they have in common in some material way. The Yacht Club, for example. The Yacht Club. I mean, really? What do these people have in common? I mean, yachts. Okay. Somehow they got one. There's a lot of ways to get a yacht. Now, that's mainly my take on Pluto. And I'm going to continue, obviously, like you, like every other person on the planet. I haven't lived through this. I've been thinking about it a heck of a lot, but no one's lived through it. So it's going to be a, let's say, an ad hoc procedure that we're going to have to kind of make it up as we go along and adapt to life day to day. But the overarching theme of Pluto and Aquarius in the highest sense of the idea is a group initiation. And it is a group initiation of creative awakening, and the creative awakening to the community that we need to have to survive on this planet where no one, where nothing survives on its own. Never. Can't happen. Certainly not in human communication. We're so, civilization, we're so completely vulnerable that, you know, we're at the point we Westerners can't live without flush toilets and buildings, and none of that happens alone. And so, you know, if you take nothing else from this reading, that's the thing to take, and to hold yourself as a gathering point, as a kind of a, I'm not quite sure if it's the center of a circle, or if it is someone who guides things gently together, or is simply aware of the process. Any of that might count. Now, while this is happening, we go from the smallest planet, Pluto, to the, well, former 136340 Pluto, now a minor planet. Six of them out there. Pluto, Charon, Nix, Hydra, and I can never remember the other two. All orbiting a common barycenter. I mean, how's this for a new take on Pluto? And whoever mentioned this in a book about Pluto is... Okay, Isabel Hickey got us as far as it's a binary before Charon was discovered. That's very impressive. She published that pamphlet. Isabel Hickey, the great Isabel Hickey, Astrology, a Cosmic Science, published the last publication of her life and said, this thing is binary. It has two facets. It has this kind of power aspect to it. This kind of, I don't remember her exact words, but a kind of the dark side that we're so familiar with. And then the wisdom facet, the light side. And then the binary pair was discovered within a year or so. Really quite astounding astrological prediction. Then two more, and then two more. It is a system. It is its own odd little molecule out there where none of the six points are the planet or the moon. They orbit a common center outside all of the other points. So when you think of Pluto and this, like, you know, really intense thing, or the mythological figure with the mask of invisibility who kidnaps people and takes them to the underworld and all that, and who's Persephone hanging out with now in the northern hemisphere because it's winter. It's a six-bodied molecule. It's got to be the most beautiful thing to see in person. But the points are tiny. They're so small, but they're all perfect. Orbiting around. All right, so we'll go from the smallest thing that's ever been recognized as a planet to two of the biggest things. So first of those, let's talk about Saturn. Since we've talked about what's going into Aquarius, let's talk about what's going out of Aquarius. That is the classical ruler of Aquarius, which is Saturn, which has been in Saturn since March 2020. Since they did this, that was the kind of synchronous coordination of Saturn and Aquarius. And a lot of people ask me if I think that they, and I know who they are, there are a bunch of people with their headquarters in Davos, Switzerland, the Davos gang, use astrology. And it sure looks like it, but I kind of don't think so. But who knows? I've gotten a few wet noodle lashings for not thinking so. We're using astrology, at least. So if they are, awesome. We have the same or better advantage that they do. Your astrology is only as good as your astrologer. So Saturn's been through this territory. Saturn has, in the fifth, has put a kind of pressure of necessity on your creative expression. It is served as a kind of a forging device that has put this almost metamorphic pressure on you to just simply find creative solutions. And Pluto is a really a kind of antiparticle to Saturn, in that it represents a balance of raw power and wisdom, of destructive capability and the most sublime spiritually creative capability. It is a very different thing than when it was discovered, a very different thing than when most of our parents and grandparents went through their Pluto transits. Indeed, when many of us went through our early Pluto transits, its work has been diffused out to many centaur planets and other trans-Neptunian objects, first of all. And second, we now know that it is this complex kind of sextet of points. And so that is the opposite of this metamorphic pressure and this sense of restraint and limitation, and it opens up the throttle, and it is a definite increase in power. So then Saturn exits Aquarius and enters Pisces. So here's why that is so interesting. And it I'm now on my seventh one of these readings, and I've written 11 and a half of them, and it just seems to get more interesting as I keep telling the story. Neptune has been in Pisces since around 2011. And Pisces is already Neptunian enough, and Neptune's already Piscean enough. You put the two of them together, and it's like this, multiplication or exponential reaction. And it has created an enormous amount of delusion, diffusion, confusion, denial, deception. Anything else? But the challenge is how difficult it is to see any of this or to give it a name, because it is tending to operate so far below the level of liminality, because it's Neptune, which I have seen disappear from charts, where I'm standing there or sitting there staring at the chart saying, what sign is that in? I'm looking around. And, like, usually my eye will just go to the planet, and I'm like, I'm going to go, that house, then that one. No, not there, not there, not there. It's Neptune. It's gone. And if you look up the discovery story of Neptune in Wikipedia, which is accurate, it's hilarious. It was seen first by Galileo, who didn't know that it was a planet. He marked its position in his notebook, and it moved over the course of a month. Stars don't move. They're fixed. And he thought, well, I don't know, can't be a planet. So he doesn't get the discovery credit. So this mysterious pot of bubbling, vaporous mystery juice is about to be met by Saturn entering the sign where it has been for more than a decade. And Saturn is a most excellent antithesis to Neptune, because it is tangible. It is solid. It is clearly defined. It is visible. It is a facet of ordinary consciousness, whereas Neptune cannot be seen and therefore represents non-ordinary consciousness. It's only accessible through some weird means, trying to think of the word, but you spin around and around and around and get really dizzy, or take a substance, or have a vision or dream or shamanic experience. That's more Neptune. Saturn is like, hello, person talking, microphone, computer. Okay, we know how this thing works. And it's going to come through Pisces over the course of 2.5 years and clear that fog up. And it's clearing the fog in a very important place associated with your health, associated with your work, associated with your well-being, associated with your commitment to service. And what I like about this transit so much, in addition to it showing up in Pisces as a kind of an antidote, is that it is going to be in Pisces for as long as Neptune is. Ultimately, around 26, 27, Saturn and Neptune leave Pisces together and form a conjunction on your seventh house cusp. And I think that takes place in 2027. So we now have a support structure around this thing that has really been, washing away our feet of clay. And it will be with us through the duration. And then Saturn will overtake Neptune eventually, and there will be this absolutely stunning conjunction that takes place. And that chart really deserves to be posted. Saturn conjunct Neptune. And if I don't, please write to me, efc@planetwaves.net. Okay, so this is my map of the lower region of your chart, the region where you're working in a nearly entirely internal space. The sixth starts to come out of it because the sixth is a more collaborative space, and the fifth is a creative space, but it's collaborative for you because Aquarius is there, but that's optional. And to the extent there may be other people hanging around in the region of Aquarius in the fifth, and your creativity and your kind of stay awake and in doing so provide a beacon for others who feel like opening their eyes and spotting the light on the horizon and finding the safe harbor, you're likely to be doing a lot of that standing on your own. In other words, it's not really about other people as much as it is about resisting other people and breaking the consensus, going what I am calling anti-environment, against the prevailing, the prevailing norms. Okay, so let's take a break. And then I'm going to come back and talk about what's going on in Aries, your seventh, and Taurus, your eighth, and your ninth, Gemini, tenth, Cancer. So we're going to do the upper tertian of the chart when I return after a little music. Tie up the loose ends fashion of Libra. I have filled my canine friend Jonah's pint-size humidifier, which is blowing in my face, a trick I learned from Sting. Not that we're friends, but once when he was having vocal problems, he just had the humidifier right on the piano, blowing the moisture right into his lungs. So it actually works better. This dryness is pretty crazy. Okay, so let's now go to the upper side of the chart. And for you, this begins with Aries. It's your relationship house and your house of environment, and it is a picture of why Libra is so relationally oriented, and that's because you have Aries in the house of relationship. So we seek ourselves where Aries is, or tend to do so, and Libra is always said to be about relationships. It's the seventh of the 12 houses. But the house for Libra that is the most Libran is the seventh, which is Aries, and that happens to be the place where you would naturally try to learn something about yourself, to become, to find, to actualize. And that alone is powerful, but now for several years you've had Chiron working its way through this house, intensifying this effect and raising the matter of relationship and self-study within relationship to a kind of a critical mass point, as well as emphasizing this profoundly important translator capacity of Chiron in the seventh house. And the interesting thing about the seventh, rather Aries, in our era is that I believe it is the scene of where our humanity has been stolen from us by the digital realm. Aquarius is where it has gone. It has gone into this shadow world of, we're all going to poison our babies, therefore you should poison your baby. In fact, if you don't poison your baby, we won't let your unpoisoned baby hang out with our poisoned babies. And people fall for this shit. And what Chiron does is give you the capacity to translate in the middle of this, to be someone that people can identify with, even though it doesn't speak to numbers, it speaks to depth and the focused purpose of the relationship. So your relationships are a place where you're going to look for yourself, particularly with Chiron there, and then a natural place of healing, of seeking healing, which is always going to be signified by Chiron and other points, but Chiron is like the master of this. Now, additionally, there's a point, very slow moving, something like a 20-year transit called Salatia in Aries. And this is about the appropriateness of sexual contact in relationships. It is everything but salacious. I know there are astrologers who are doing the 1, 2, 3 quickie false etymology delineation of Salatia. Ooh, Salatia means salacious, except that the goddess Salatia was not salacious. So far as I understand it, she was a sea nymph virgin whom Neptune, the god of the sea, the rivers, and earthquakes, had to send a dolphin with the message of betrothal. And she responded in the affirmative. So she's a rather proper girl, and I take Salatia as not about being proper, but about setting your own terms of appropriateness. Setting your own terms of appropriateness. Most of what happens in the world is we let people set our terms of appropriateness for us, and it's never right. It's always tracking an agenda of someone else that has nothing to do with, you know, our benefit or well-being. So that's there. And Eris is there. And Eris has been there for a century in Aries. Entered in 1922. Took about 4 years to settle in finally, but still the first contact was 1922. And this has been the place where we have essentially had our individuality mowed down, like the artsy kid being given a crew cut fit for the Marine Corps. We're all going to be the same, and we're all going to be members of the tribe, and we're not going to be individuals. That's the message of the electrical world. The message of the electrical world, the television world, the radio world, the digital world, is you are irrelevant. The message of the cinema world is that guy's got $1 billion, and you got half a ticket torn in half, or a receipt for $3.99 from Amazon. Who's relevant now? So, your quest for relevance is really a quest for healing and for contact. In a world where it is difficult to have any of the above, but at least you can set the agenda and not be in this desperate condition that practically everything and everyone on social media and Substack and all of their cousins is in this desperate competition to be someone. That's not how it's done. But how it is done is you connect one person at a time for a good reason, or because it's the thing to do. Jupiter sweeps through. Now remember, bear in mind, and I have not emphasized this point much, but I must for you, and I've got to slip it into Aries someplace, that after all of this that I'm describing happens, Saturn and Neptune come right up into Aries. So there is a there's sign after sign. For example, there's also going to be the Chiron-Eris conjunction. That you have some traction in this world where everyone is slowly being reduced to nothing. Jupiter is now in Aries. Jupiter is going to sweep through in about 4.5 months and enter Taurus in mid-May. And along the way, we'll make contact with, boom, Salacia, Chiron, Eris, magnifying each of those principles one at a time, so you can see them for what they are. So the idea of appropriateness is going to come up. You setting the terms of what's appropriate. It might be naked, it might be in a tuxedo. It might be all five of them, it might be none of them. Chiron, the healing translator, the ability to open up the dialogue and the communication. By the way, Planet Waves is Libra rising, and my journalistic colleagues marvel at my ability to, first of all, manage investigative reporting and astrology with full credibility on both sides, and also to do this crazy thing of getting along with people I plainly disagree with. It's a very Libran thing, and it's a very Chiron in Aries thing, Chiron in the seventh of Libra. So Jupiter comes through. And the Jupiter presence, the Salacia presence, the Chiron presence are all answers to Eris having been here for a century. Pretty much nobody alive. I mean, there's a few people, a few super duper old ones. Maybe I've got like two readers with Eris and Pisces. Okay, so this is substance and presence and a sense of being and belonging in the world. And Jupiter keeps rising. It's now going to the top. And it is next going to enter Taurus in May, where it will be for a year. Now, Taurus is an indicator that Libra is a very strong financial sign. The reason for that is because it speaks to stable financial relationships and other types of consummated partnerships, whether consummated by money or sex, with others. But Uranus has been there. And Uranus is shaking the tree, and it has likely been responsible both for financial instability in terms of your contractual relationships with people, but also that translates to wins and losses and wins and losses. And it is likely that despite thinking you're down, that relative to the whole, you're not. And the ingress of Jupiter into Taurus in the spring, northern spring, is going to open up resources for you and stabilize your situation. So no rush on that, because Jupiter in Aries is similar enough. The possibilities and the potentials just show up on the horizon. So keep an eye for them. And don't count yourself out for any reason. A lot of reasons to count yourself out, but don't fall for it. The Jupiter in Taurus trip culminates with the conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus in spring of 24, April. And this is, to my eye, the moment of the like the birth of the collaboration or the point of flourishing. So we're a little ahead of ourselves there, but not so much, because it's coming and you should know about it. Now, the other thing is that the Beltane principle of honor the goddess by allowing your sexual energy to be open and to consummate the polarities, the male-female polarities, however you choose to express them, is good for the flow of money. Remembering that all wealth comes from the earth, our bodies come from the earth, and that the goddess is our symbolic source of abundance, but she is one hot babe. The goddess is not the goddess of abundance and love is not the Virgin Mary. It's a mythical character of a goddess who doesn't procreate. I mean, there are various and sundry virgin goddesses, but you know what's going on when the Vestal priestesses are hanging out in the back room. Okay, so that's that, and I read that Jupiter entering Aries and then entering Taurus will help with stabilization. Now, speaking of destabilizing, there's been a long journey of Mars through Gemini. This starts in late August, so it's really, let's count September, October, November, December. So that's more than 4 months, and then January, February, and most of March. So we're a little bit past the halfway point on that, kind of at the 60% point through this journey. And this is encouraging you to get your spiritual act together, to get the various hemispheres of your spiritual life into harmony with each other, to resolve the contradictions that you may be experiencing, and focus your power by being in alignment and in harmony with yourself, by being in spiritual harmony with yourself. I often say that there are two kinds of Geminis. There's one where the twins get along, and there's one where the twins don't get along. And you could also say there's one where the twins are aware of each other, and another kind where they're not aware of each other, which is a form of not getting along. So you want to be the kind of Gemini in your spiritual life, which is where you have the sign Gemini, where the twins know about each other. They speak, they get along, they have their language, they have their history, and they can function by consensus. All right. So when that's over in March, right around the time of the Great Watershed, Saturn entering Pisces, Pluto entering Aquarius, Mars changes signs. And again, that's not normally a big deal because Mars just blows through a sign usually in like a 6 weeks or something. Only now it's been in Gemini, will have been in Gemini for 7 months after a long and strange retrograde. Pardon me. A long, strange retrograde made stranger by this quality of Mars square Neptune, which has, above all else, encouraged you to go beyond any self-deceit, self-deception, delusional thinking, denial, and to get truthful with yourself. Nothing else is spiritual. The spiritual path is not one of shove it in the closet. The spiritual path is the one about cleaning the closet. The spiritual path is the one about knowing what you believe and asking yourself whether it's true. And if it's not, if it doesn't pass fact-checking, you toss it. Well, you recognize you're operating from belief. And then that work done, so please do it. Mars crosses your midheaven and enters Cancer. And this is a tremendous capacity to focus your intentions and your goals in entirely new ways. To really make a choice and stick with it. And there's tremendous drive to succeed. So see yourself as that successful person. All right, last major item. Your ruling planet does something cool this year, which is it is retrograde in Venus. And so in the style of interplanet retrogrades, it's going to spend 4 months in Leo as opposed to the usual three-ish weeks in Leo. So that's quite a while. It's long enough to learn something special and to orient and have a few different forms of the valence of Venus. That being direct, retrograde, and then direct in the degrees where it was retrograde, then entering new territory. And this is an absolutely fabulous position for public relations, for building your public profile, building your public profile for the purpose of raising revenue. There is something a little famous about Libra. I think of Libra as being the great sign of rock stars. I'm not sure if you're a Dead fan, but one of my favorite members of the Grateful Dead of all time was a man named Brent Midland, a consummate Libra. Who was just such a fabulous rock star and such a tasteful player, who could just turn up the jet of that mysterious Libra blowtorch that can shrink itself down to a thing that is so small that you can barely see it in the dark, and then, without striking a spark, turn up the fuel and have the flame be hot and focused enough to just cut through metal. Brent Midland, check him out. And so part of that star quality of Libra is the position of Leo in this publicly facing angle in your chart. And here, the 11th, you will have Venus enhancing this already significant, really excellent public image that you that you put forth deservingly. There's real warmth to your public presence. We all have a public presence now. It used to be the in like let's see, 1997 or 96, the client who showed up in a black Jaguar and a black dress and told me how famous she was because she was a realtor down in Florida, And she had her picture in supermarket shopping carts. Can you believe that? That's how famous she was. Well, go back in time and break it to her. I didn't see it coming, but now we're all that famous. And you, though, get to stand out even higher than the analog age fame and fortune of having your picture in supermarket shopping carts. And a little ad, you know, a little ad sometimes they used to have. I guess they do weird things down in Florida. And this is a raise your profile, have a strong social presence, clean up your public relations act, and be a benefactor. With Cancer on the 10th and Leo on the 11th, you are just someone who is seen as a benefactor. Now you make that work for you. You make sure the people who can pay, pay. The people who can pay a lot, pay a lot. People who can't pay shit, pay a little or nothing. And you work that out. Libra's all about what's fair. So you got to figure out what's fair and make sure that while you're busy figuring out what's fair, you make sure you figure out what's fair to you. Eureka. All right. One last idea. There's not a heck of a lot of planets going through Libra right now. They're all minor planets. So there's no well-known outer planets. There's no major inner planet events in Libra. But what there is Logos, a slow mover, a creation god. If you start looking it up in philosophy, it's just hideously complicated by like a bunch of Jesuits who had nothing else to do but sit around in their monk chamber and, you know, write 3,000 words a day for their entire life about this thing and create a whole bunch of Catholic bullshit about it. But Logos translates to, in the beginning, there was the Word. And so remember that for you, in the beginning, there is the Word. And so make your words matter. Focus your words. You are a philosophical wordsmith, Sag on the 3rd. You have the ability to write about things that are transcendent and to write in a transcendent way. But Logos, the Word, is saying, keep it clear. Know what you're talking about. Don't be afraid to write the paragraph and say, what did I mean? What does this thing mean? And to throw away like the other five sentences in the paragraph and keep the one that works. Or alternately, to scribble down the four-word combination and build the whole thing on one idea. So there's something here about the seed principle of the Word being the thing. The Word being the thing. To study, to learn, to understand, read and write a lot. Please, not on Kindles. We are losing our shit by diluting ourselves in digital. And so the more you can do pencil and paper, or pen and paper. I'm a pencil person because I like to be able to erase things. And books that you can own and crack the binding and smell and carry around with you and move into like a little house that your spirit lives in for a couple of weeks while you're reading it. Be one with words. This will benefit you every way, and though there have probably never been more words made in a day than there are today, it is likely they have never been more meaningless on average. And so for you, this would be about making sure that your words have meaning, that you learn from words, that working with words on the reading or the writing in teaches you that the alchemical a collaboration of reading and writing teaches you, and that you use the power of words to convey your intent, what you want to happen. And the question is always, what is your intent? Translation, what do you intend to happen? What do you intend this to mean? I'm not talking about intention. I have good intentions. I mean, gotta do that thing. We've got to get that done by that day in that Saturnian structure. And you then craft that like a little brick, and you put it down. And then you make another one, and you build, and you build, and you are working from intent. Right? Dig me? Okay, good. Pleasure doing this reading. I wasn't sure I had it in me. But my voice and my lungs have more or less held up thanks to my co-opting Jonah's little adorable pint-size blue glowing humidifier here on my desk, and some B vitamins, and tomorrow's Christmas. I'm signing off, wow, at 10:38 p.m. on Christmas Eve in Kingston, New York, where the weather says it's 11 degrees outside and partly sunny, but the sun's not shining because it's dark out. And I'll catch you another time and place, perhaps a different sign. Please, by the way, speaking of words and reading and writing, print out your reading, the paper one. It's not intended for use on a phone or Kindle, but rather, excuse me, to be made into a physical object that you then do whatever you want with. Mark it up, underline it, underscore it, add pages, ask questions, put it in your notebook, and fully take ownership. Agree, disagree, elaborate, extrapolate, interpolate, make it yours. Because that's astrology, and that is life. All right, love. Till next time. Thank you for your business, your time, and most of all, your trust. Bye for now.